The Bible Study on KFUO Radio is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, centered in the gospel of Jesus Christ in faithfulness, servanthood, responsiveness, and excellence, Concordia Seminary.
This is the Ask the Pastor Hour. Our numbers are 505-7850 and 1-800-730-2727. Our guest in this hour is Tom Reese. He is president of the LCMS Foundation, or the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod Foundation. For those of you who are saying, LCMS, what does that mean? So he knows a thing or two about money, investments. He's going to give us stock tips that are going to make us rich today. No, he's chuckling. I don't think any stock tips are forthcoming. Morning, Pastor.
Morning, Chuck. Good to be here.
How's the summer going for you?
Summer so far is going good. Very good.
The economy's not very good. Hasn't been very good for a while now. Does that put a damper on your mood over there at the LCMS Foundation?
Hasn't done that to us. We have actually, in terms of the economy today, it's significantly more promising, we would say, than it was 18 months ago. And in terms of the financial markets, which we look at quite carefully, things are a lot more calm and improved than they were 15 months ago.
Now, when you say when we look at the financial markets quite carefully, I don't want you to go into detail, and it won't be hard for you to talk right over my head here. But what does that mean in the context of a work day for you or for the people who work in the foundation? Are you guys doing pretty much the same thing they do at A.G. Edwards or places like that? Is it different somehow?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are some similarities, but it's quite a bit different from what would happen at places like that. At the LCMS Foundation, we have an investment advisor. One of the best in the country, best in the world, is Wilshire Consulting, and they provide the investment advice for us. And so our basic outlook on financial markets is probably monthly rather than a daily look at it. And then we track things very carefully monthly, and then we're always looking for long-term trends and performance over years and even a decade. So it's a more sedate, I would say, approach that we have to looking at financial markets, and certainly not the frenzied type of thing that would occur in day-to-day trading in an office on Wall Street or even here in some places in St. Louis. A.G. Edwards and financial advisors, those kinds of things, are probably in the middle somewhere, depending on the role that certain employees have within those organizations. Some of them are working with individual customers and people on a daily basis, and others are tracking the markets and watching what's happening to the assets that those companies have positioned, maybe even hourly.
Hmm. Why does the LCMS need a foundation? Lots of places, church bodies, secular organizations, they have foundations. What do foundations do?
Great question. Foundations, the kind of foundations that you're talking about are often referred to as custodial foundations. That is that they are caregiving to assets of people who have a passion for that organization. So if there is a church body like ours that has a foundation, it is to help individuals make gifts to the ministries that they are passionate about. And in that process, those gifting processes and opportunities sometimes generate assets that need to be managed, you know, in the financial markets. I can give you some examples of that. If you and I, Chuck, are asked to give a gift at our church and we write a check, that's a simple gift and it doesn't require much management at all. It goes to the treasurer, he puts it in the bank, the church puts it to whatever purpose we said it would be, and it's pretty much taken care of. But in many other types of giving, there can be a plan that goes into it where individuals set aside assets, where they get some contribution credit, not only from the ministry they are giving it to, but also from the Internal Revenue Service. So there's a tax benefit. but the asset produces an income until those people are called to their eternal home in heaven, and then the dollars are distributed to the ministries that they care about. Trusts and charitable trusts and charitable gift annuities are two of the most common ways that people give like that. So it's kind of a neat deal, because if I have $5,000 or $10,000 or $15,000 or $100,000 or $1 million, whatever the amount may be, and I want to set that up into one of those tax-advantaged charitable instruments, I can do that. And then somebody has to manage that while it is an investment, and that's where the foundations come in.
Do you have a picture of the statistical or average LCMS foundation, is it called a client or donor or whatever?
Mm-hmm. Called a donor, right.
Is there an average age, an average income, any of that?
Yeah, we do have those kinds of statistics. The average age of donors to the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod Foundation, or through the foundation, I should say, are certainly in their upper years. And I wouldn't be able to pinpoint an exact average age, but it's we have donors that are most of the. If I was going to come up with an average number, I would say it's in the 60s.
And I would think that, you see, now I'm not a financial guy, which is why I always enjoy it when you come here and we get to talk a little bit about this. If I'm sitting in a voters meeting or a congregational meeting at my church, and the treasurer gets up to give a report. I mean, at our church, we got a couple of guys who are vice president types at banks. Mm-hmm. I look at those guys and I think to myself, I hope they're paying attention now, because if somebody's trying to sneak the sun past the rooster, I'm not going to catch it. Mm-hmm. I don't have that kind of expertise or skill. So when it comes to taking advantage of some of the things that you've described here, are you going to educate me? Are you going, you know, I got no expertise at all.
Right.
I heard you describe some products, annuities, and things like that. I don't know what we're talking about here. Are you going to educate me? Am I going to understand it when we're done? Or is it sort of like the plumber? The toilet doesn't work. The plumber comes. When he leaves, the toilet works. I don't know what he did. I don't know how it worked, but now I know it worked. Which way is it?
No, you're right. It's a very engaging process, and the process of gift planning is helping individuals develop what we call a lifetime plan for giving. And so when we meet with people, it doesn't begin with a dollar and cents conversation. It always begins with a faith conversation, and those are very rewarding visits. So if we're going to sit down and talk to someone, if we were to sit down and talk with you, Chuck, we would talk about, we would begin the meeting with prayer and bathe the whole process in prayer, first of all. But then we would want to talk to you about what are your passions about your faith, and certainly want to discover your road of faith. And you and I have talked about that a little bit, so I know something about it, and you know about mine. But as we work through that whole process of faith discovery, and we get to the point of what is important to you in terms of ministries that you care about. And those are really the key questions that we start with. And when we talk to people, by the way, last year, 696 different ministries received some kind of a gift through the processes of the LCMS Foundation. And so it's a lot of different types of ministries. Most of those are congregations. So when you talk to people, the first thing that they're passionate about almost exclusively is their congregation, because that's the heart and center of their life of worship and service. But they also have other things that they're passionate about, other ministries, and that can be a lot of things. It could be the Christian college or seminary that they attended. It could be a secular college that they attended or university. We can help with that as well. So it's those kinds of things that beat in the heart of a Christian, but we're talking to Christians when we're doing this, and how would you like to, with the assets that you have, benefit those types of ministries? Now, then what happens, a lot of people say, well, God, I don't even know what kind of assets I have. What are you talking about? And so then, Chuck, the financial conversation does come into play. So it's fairly long down the pipeline.
So for an uninformed guy like me, doesn't really understand too much about investing or finance, but I do pay attention to the news. And I know that just here in the last couple of weeks, we saw some statistics that giving is down. Charitable giving is down, mm-hmm. Including church giving. And unemployment is 10%, mm-hmm. 9.7, something like that. It hasn't really moved much for quite a while. There are some tax cuts that I understand that are going to expire at the end of the year, and that means taxes are going to be going up. Does any of that impact this conversation we're talking about here? Are you in a position to say, no, when we have our conversation, we're going to be on a track to discover what it is that you want to do in terms of your giving in the future, and how you want that to play out, and tax cuts and unemployment don't really affect that in any way? Or are you in a position to say, you're right, tax cuts mm-hmm. and unemployment have an effect on this, and we can help you work through that? Or is there another option?
Well, that's a great question. The foundations do not serve as financial planners, so we're not in a position to sit down and help a person with their entire financial plan. But that whole idea of what is your employment picture, what is the tax picture for you personally, what do investment markets look like in the today, and what are they going to look like in the future, those are all factors that do come into the conversation and should. And we eventually, there's a lot of give and take that goes back and forth in this process of helping a person develop the gift plan portion of their financial life. Once that gift plan is on paper and we have helped them achieve something that they say, yeah, that looks good, I like the things you're talking about, it's very important for them to do one of two things. Take that to either their own CPA or their own financial planner, if they have such a thing. And if not that, then certainly to take it to an attorney of their own to have him or her look that over with them. Because the gift plan fits into the whole financial plan. We really do, in that regard, welcome and crave relationships with Christian attorneys and Christian certified accountants and so forth, because if they're not, and if they're not charitable themselves, they can often tell the donor, what are you doing that for? That doesn't do you any good. I mean, why would you give money to something like that? And believe it or not, that does happen.
I believe that happens. Yeah. Sure. All right. One more question on this subject, and then we'll move on to something else.
Okay.
Here. And that is, I have a suspicion that one of the reasons, perhaps, that the people with whom you work, the donors with whom you work, are older, are because they know they should be getting some of these things in order, but mm-hmm. they put it off. They don't want to think about it. They actually connect it with getting older, and so for that reason have kind of a bad attitude about it. And today, somebody listening to us is saying, well, that's me. He just described me.
Mm-hmm.
And I really do need to talk to somebody. I think I'd like to talk to this Tom Reese guy.
Mm-hmm.
They can't just call the president of the LCMS Foundation. I'm sure you're deeply embedded in the bowels of the International Center, unreachable by all the rest of us common folk. Am I right?
No, that's not true. They can call me directly if they'd like. That'd
really?
Yeah, absolutely.
What's your telephone number?
Direct phone is 314-996-1450. I'd be happy to talk to
him. 996, say it again.
314-996-1450, 1450.
And
now, I'm not necessarily going to sit down with them, but I'll get them in the right place if that's what they need. Absolutely.
And when you answer the phone and they say, I heard you on the radio this morning, and there are some of these things that I'd like to go over, what's going to happen? What are you going to say?
Well, we're going to talk about just some in general, what their reason for calling is and what's on their mind, if they have.
Because I'm a little intimidated here, you know. I'm not on familiar turf.
Yeah, that's right. If they simply have general questions, that would be great. We can have that conversation and talk about, again, in more detail, what we do and how we do it. And if they have questions about, my parents are getting up and I'm responsible for helping with their financial resources, can you help me with this? And they were charitable people. That's a specific issue. They may have, my parents just died, and we have this farm we don't know what to do with. Can there be some help in that regard? So sometimes it's specific questions that we follow up on, and sometimes it's general questions. I don't believe anybody would be come away feeling intimidated. We have a real gentle sense and a desire to meet people where they're at. Would love to do that.
996-1450.
Righto.
Don't call him now because he's not there. He's here,
that's
but
right.
You can call him later. All right, let's turn our attention to something else here. I got off the what is called the Christian Newswire. The headline on this story is, Will Presbyterians Target Israel or Choose Fairness? Now, you'll be able to detect a bias in this story. It's not that bias that I want to talk about, but let me just read a little bit here. The story says, Pro-Palestinian activists are making a bid to bring the Presbyterian Church USA back into their camp. They won a victory in 2004 when the church's General Assembly authorized divestment from companies doing business with Israel. That divestment mandate was rescinded in 2006 following a major effort by opponents, including IRD. The 2008 Assembly pledged that we will, quote, we will not over-identify with the realities of the Israelis or the Palestinians, unquote. And warned against taking broad stands that simplify a very complex situation into a caricature of reality, where one side clearly is at fault and the other side is clearly the victims. Now the activists are back with a new report that levies a long list of demands against Israel and asks the United States government to withhold aid as a means of bringing Israel to compliance. The Presbyterian Church General Assembly will convene July 3rd through 10th in a place that I think you're familiar with, Pastor, Minneapolis.
There you go.
So, I'm not here to discuss the politics of the Presbyterians, but I am curious, as you're going over investments and things like that, do you at the LCMS Foundation have a sensitivity to whether or not money is invested in Israel or Palestine or Iraq or Russia or Italy? Does any of that matter?
In terms of our investment policy, that's a great question, because every denominational foundation that I've ever seen has some kind of investment guidelines that reflect their theological and, in some cases, political stance. And that's always interesting to see how they arrive at those decisions and how they follow through on those. For example, there are numerous, I can't tell you how many, but there are numerous faith-based mutual funds that are publicly gathered assets, and the managers of those funds place them in investments based on their theological viewpoints. So those who may be in the evangelical Christian arena would avoid putting investments in the stocks of distilleries and breweries and those kinds of things because of their stance on alcohol, use of alcohol. The LCMS Foundation has an investment policy where we instruct our investment advisors to keep us out of the stocks of companies that actively promote abortion products and those things that lead to termination of life in that regard. It's difficult, admittedly, to get to the bottom of all of that. But that is certainly part of our investment policy. Well, the LCMS Foundation, to my knowledge, has never tried to craft an investment policy regarding the conduct of various nations. In the 80s, there were a number of universities in this country and a number of foundations of universities and other organizations and denominations that tried to remove their investment interest from anything in South Africa because of apartheid.
I remember that.
And it's a great conversation. I mean, the appropriateness or inappropriateness of that is a beautiful conversation to have. Oftentimes, for example, U.S. government policy, many people had favored rather than, we're doing this in Cuba. U.S. government policy today is an embargo against Cuba. So we don't send any dollars, no tourist dollars, and no trade with Cuba. It's been a long-standing policy that is continually challenged. But why is that? Because of the oppressive regime in Cuba. At least our government feels that way. And so they try to cut off investing and trafficking and commercialization in Cuba. People have suggested that would be a more appropriate response in Iraq than having had sent troops there when we went there with our military. And interesting, then you get into the conversation, well, yeah, but sometimes those kinds of embargoes do more harm to the common people than they do to the oppressive regimes that are keeping the common people in chains. So you have a lot of things to discuss there. But in terms of the LCMS Foundation, we have tried to stay away from those kinds of investments that have, as I say, direct impact on life issues. And since our theology is of alcohol usage and other things is not the same as other denominations, we don't concern ourselves about that.
Well, now, my family has a financial planner, and we meet with him every so often.
Terrific.
He seems to think diversification is very important. I'll bet you do, too.
You got that right.
You got that right. And even I can figure that out. You put all your money in one place, and that place goes south, and all your money is gone. So
right.
You don't want that to happen. But he will, you know, here's where you are, Chuck. You sit down there at the kitchen table, and he slide me a pie chart, and it's got like 15 different wedges in it. There's money in this, money in this, money in this, money, blah, 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 bonds, all this kind of stuff. I'm thinking, there's a dollar in there somewhere that I probably don't want it to be, because it's in a mutual fund, and if I pulled the thread on it for a while, I'd wind up in an abortion connection,
yeah, right,
or something. But he can't possibly investigate all of that. How
no can
how
do.
Much investigation is responsible investigation, and how much? Where do you get to the point where it's like, well, look, we've looked at this with a microscope, we feel pretty good about it. If you discover there's something in there you don't like, let us know. Where's that line?
That line is wherever the individual wants to draw it, and I hate to say it that way, but that is the case.
Well, I'm not going to draw it. I have no clue. I mean, I am clueless.
Then you're probably best suited just simply to say, well, I've done the best I can. I can't do any more about it. If I'm a member of a strong union family, folks that grew up in a union family and they belong to the Teamsters Union or whatever, they have their own viewpoints about what's appropriate in certain companies, and we want to stay away from those companies just because they don't like that company and the way they treat, you know, unions.
Right.
And that's a personal decision, so you have to follow that thread yourself. In your case, if you get to the point, though, you have to let it go. I mean, you can't continue to try and pull every possible thread out of every possible company, because every single company has likely things that we don't like the way they do things, but that would make for a very difficult challenge to put together a portfolio. I'd be happy to have some listeners' comments on that, though. That would be a good good input on it.
And let's turn that coin over in the minute or so that remains before we take our break here. I'm a Christian person. I have a fairly well-defined theology. But I don't look at any of that stuff. For all I know, I might have money invested in Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood.
Mm-hmm.
Am I being irresponsible? Should I? Do I have a responsibility as a Christian to at least ask some questions of my financial planner or take a look myself?
Yeah, I think it's a fair question to ask your financial planner, and I think it is a fair question to see what would be some possible options if I wanted to do that. If I want, and this is, if you're in a certain kind of a fund called an index fund, and they have the stocks of a common index fund is an S&P 500 index fund, which is 500 of the biggest companies. If you're in that index fund, you've got a piece of those 500 companies. You can't do anything about it. And if you truly felt that there was a company in there I wanted not to be in, you'd have to pick a different kind of an approach to investing. And certainly an individual could do that.
All right. If you have any questions as it pertains to finance for President Tom Reese, president of the LCMS Foundation, we'll welcome those phone calls on the other side of the break. We're probably going to go in a different direction here, but that doesn't mean that you can't interrupt the flow of the conversation. If you have something that's on your mind and you halfway through the next hour decide you want to ask it, feel free to call us, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727.
Back in the day, a man became a pastor by moving to the seminary. Today, Concordia Seminary has 7 routes that lead to pastoral ministry. The Specific Ministry Pastor Program is a 4-year program where men become pastors through the World Wide Web while they continue to live and work in the congregations they are already serving. Keeping up with the times, that's Concordia Seminary.
Hi, I'm Mark Hawkinson, inviting you to join me for a KFUO Sunday that's this weekend at Trinity Lutheran Church in Edwardsville. I'll be preaching at the 5:30 p.m. service on Saturday as well as 8 and 10:30 on Sunday. Bible class will be at 9:30 a.m. where you can find out more about this vital radio ministry. That's a KFUO Sunday this weekend at Trinity Lutheran Church in Edwardsville. Hope to see you there.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Florida Governor Charlie Crist is running again for the U.S. Senate, this time as an independent. When it was obvious he couldn't win the Republican primary, he switched his party affiliation. Recently, the governor vetoed a bill requiring women be offered an ultrasound of their baby before having an abortion. He also vetoed protections against using the tax dollars of Floridians in a nationalized health care plan. Mr. Crist was pro-abortion during his first Senate run. Then, as a candidate for governor, he said he was pro-life. Now, again running for the Senate, he is pro-abortion. Political observers have been shocked by what they call this cold, calculated decision on abortion. Voters everywhere need to be aware candidates often use innocent unborn babies as a political football.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
Why do you think there are so many religions? More to the point, why do you think that most people do not object to there being different religions? The answer may surprise you. It's because many people regard religions like their diets. We will explain that one on the next Law and Gospel, which just so happens also to be an open mic Friday.
Weekdays at 6 on KFUO Radio.
Daily guided tours of the only World Heritage site in Illinois are ongoing, weather permitting. Cahokia Mound State Historic Site in Collinsville has daily guided tours Monday through Saturday, 10:30 a.m. and 2:30 p.m., and on Sunday at 12:30 and 2:30 p.m. Written tour guides are available in English and 10 other languages. You can see more information about the site online at cahokiamounds.org.
I'm Steve Coleman with today's Religion Roundup. Johnny Erickson Tata, a quadriplegic whose ministry provides wheelchairs to people around the world, has been diagnosed with breast cancer. Doug Mazza, president of Johnny and Friends International Disability Center, says the 60-year-old Tata will undergo surgery Monday, allowing doctors to determine how far the cancer has spread.
Her first words after hearing that she had cancer were, God is up to something very big.
A diving accident in 1967 left Tata paralyzed below the neck and wanting to die.
She tried to kill herself and couldn't find a way to do it. And finally, out of desperation, screamed out in the night, God, if you're not going to kill me, then show me how to live.
Tata says she now believes afflictions come from a loving God, and she's content to receive from God whatever he deems fit. Mazza says,
we are certainly all praying for the best.
I'm Steve Coleman.
You're listening to the Bible Study. I'm Chuck Rathert. Our numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. If you'd like to join us with a question or a comment, we've kind of spent the first half hour here talking about finance because our guest has that kind of expertise. He is the president of the LCMS Foundation, Pastor Tom Reese. And now I want to go in a different direction here, Pastor, and we probably should tell people, used to be the pastor of a parish, right?
For many years, yes.
You know what it's like to stand in the pulpit? You know what it's like to comfort the dying and the sick, right?
I do. It's a high calling, that's for sure.
Michael Medved wrote a little column, and the headline is Al Tipper and the Myth of a Good Divorce. Let me read just a little bit of this. The separation of Al and Tipper Gore after 40 years as husband and wife produced a flood of commentary concerning what's purportedly impossible and possible in modern marriage. According to rapidly calcifying conventional wisdom, the Gore breakup shows that it's impossible to uphold the old ideal of till death do us part, and indicates that even the best matched couples can't reasonably expect that their love can last a lifetime. Meanwhile, admiring pundits note that the Gores have handled their situation with dignity and discretion, demonstrating the real possibility of a good divorce. Actually, both conclusions contradict reality for most Americans. The statistics show that loving lifetime marriage isn't just possible, it's prevalent. And common sense and sad experience expose the notion of the good divorce as a destructive myth, since the end of every marriage brings pain, problems, and damage to society. So let's stop there and let's just get your reaction to some of this. First of all, I'm curious in your evaluation of Michael Medved's phrase, rapidly calcifying conventional wisdom. Hmm. Agree or disagree?
Well, I'm not, gosh, that's a tough one to talk about the general view of society and what becomes to be conventional wisdom. From a pastor's perspective, and having pastors day by day here on the Bible study as you do, divorce is always a challenge, and it's always painful. I mean, I haven't ever seen anyone that was painless. So maybe I'm just associating with the wrong folks, or maybe they're the wrong ones that came to my congregation.
Not one?
Not one, no.
Not one where you said, well, you know, that's not a good thing. Divorce is, but it was probably good in their situation.
Well, necessary, maybe. But necessary does not mean painless, and it doesn't all, it never means good, in the sense of God's ideal for marriage, obviously. So our return to Scripture and the power that is in the love and the grace and the guidance that comes from God's Word in every aspect of our lives, including marriage, is where we would want to focus rather than the calcified. What'd you say? Calcified.
The calcifying conventional wisdom.
There you go. There you go. Great phrase.
All right. So I know Michael Medved doesn't believe this, and I'm pretty sure you
right.
don't either, but there are those, and their voices are increasing in number and strength, who would say something like this. Well, Pastor, if you want to throw that till death do us part into the ceremony, go ahead. But
sure.
That is an archaic, that is an obsolete phrase. Probably better off to take that out of the wedding liturgy there, because it's just not a reality anymore, till death do us part. You say what?
Well, it's certainly a reality to have that vision, and that vision is a beautiful vision. It's a vision that is godly, it's divinely inspired, and it's a wonderful arrangement when it works, and many of us are in marriages that, God willing, will have that pattern. A friend of mine just told me today, June 25th is his and his wife's 49th wedding anniversary. It's pretty cool.
We have an aunt and uncle in actually my wife's family who, I don't know, right about this time, I'm not sure what the exact date is, 70 years.
No kidding.
70 years.
Wow. Yeah.
Married. But it's my understanding that young people have rearranged till death to us part into something like as long as we shall love
mm-hmm.
instead of live.
Mm.
Anticipating the possibility, maybe even the probability that this is not going to last, you know, until
mm-hmm.
one of us is gone. You use the word vision.
Mm-hmm.
Is the vision of till death do us part primarily the vision of the Lord or the vision of the married couple?
Mm. Well, it's certainly the vision of the Lord. And when the married couple, by God's grace, can espouse that as their own vision and have it be a part of their life And obviously, we would say works best when it is centered in and bathed in the grace of God in Jesus Christ, where both individuals have that beating in their hearts. Then you have a vision of marriage. In fact, Professor Rosso, who taught homiletics here at the seminary for many years, used to talk about the representation of the Trinity in marriage. In other words, in fact, he used to use the phrase Trinity in dinity, kind of like that. The dinity being two persons joined together as husband and wife. But that the ideal in God's eyes is that he is present in that marriage just as much as he is present in their individual spiritual lives. I like that phrase very much, and I think it reflects what God's vision is for people.
I see a problem emerging here, because maybe you'll be the exception. Maybe you'll be the first pastor to tell me, well, that's not my experience. But on those occasions when I've brought up the business of getting ready for the wedding, premarital counseling, pastors are telling me that pretty much more than half of the young people, and now these days some of the middle-aged people who are coming to them for a wedding, already living together.
Mm.
Is that your experience?
That was my experience already in the 90s when I was the last pastor of a congregation. And it was, I wouldn't say that there were notable cases in my church. And I'm not sure if it was half, but it was certainly a large number that were in that situation.
So that's inconsistent with the Word of God, isn't it? I mean, that's a problem, right? I guess you would address that in premarital counseling.
Right.
So if the, let's just use young people, if the 20-somethings who are sitting in your office, Pastor Reese, we'd really like to have a wedding, and okay, well, let's talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
It comes to your attention that they're living together.
Mm-hmm.
If they're that out of touch with the Word of God, how can you possibly expect them to be in a position to embrace till death do us part?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're just behind the eight ball, aren't you?
Yep. That's nobody ever said it was going to be easy, and that's for sure. And it,
well, at least you're honest.
But I like having this discussion with other pastors, because there are some that have different approaches. There are varying approaches, let's put it that way. I've seen pastors, and I've seen some that are even all across the perspective of what you might call conservative, all the way to moderate to liberal pastors, having the same viewpoint that if I'm going to do the ceremony, that means that you need to go live apart for 6 months, or fill in the date that they come up with, and then come back and talk to me. And you know, I'm not one to be critical of that kind of an approach. If there is a lot of thought and reason and purpose behind that, and the pastor can pastorally to the couple during that process, we're all for it. Others try to help them understand that the vision of marriage is beyond just a cohabiting relationship, but there's lots of things that go into learning to know each other and preparing for marriage, and do not make that hard and fast requirement of separation, and there's everything in between.
I have a feeling, I hope this isn't turn out to be true, but I think it will, that 50 or 100 years from now, when the historians are writing about the quote-unquote boomer generation, the legacy of the boomers will be that we hunted down every boundary we could find to destroy it. And the boundary that used to be fairly well accepted in our culture and now is on its way to being expunged, that when you get married, it ought to be one man, one woman for a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it ought to be.
Mm-hmm.
That's the ideal, and that's what every couple should aspire to do. That's a boundary we can't have. We can't have that. If you've been married for 20 years and you're done, then you ought to be able to say you're done. You ought to be able to walk away with your head held high, and you don't need some pastor nagging you about, no, this was supposed to be a life. Don't you remember when you said, till death do us part? How do you respond to the cultural dynamic, the pressure to get people to say, it's okay to divorce? I mean, it happens. And if it happens to you, don't be encumbered by that till death do us part promise that you made before God and his altar. How do you respond to those folks?
Yeah, I think that it depends on who's making the comment. If it's social commentators, that's one thing. If it's people who are literally facing and going through a divorce, you may have a different conversation with them, because they're the ones that are going to be feeling the pain. It's easy to stand outside of everyone else's pain and make observations, one way or the other. A non-Christian social commentator can make their pronouncements, and even Christian theologians can make their pronouncements. If they're not doing it in the context of someone's pain or their own pain, then those are different statements that come out of their mouths, actually. Holding the vision of what God has intended for his people is an important part of ministry. But unfortunately, not one single one of us has lived up to that vision. And the incredible destruction that sin brings into the lives of all of us and into our society and into our world is the reason we have to have those conversations at all. I personally believe we have to patiently and persistently continue in our witness to what God intends for all of us. The fact that we have not measured up to those intentions means that we are in a fallen condition, and we are restored by grace and bring it back to Christ in grace every single time. At that point, we all are part of the human race, and helping each other to do the best we can to live according to the vision that God has for us, still knowing we're fallen, still knowing we will never measure up completely, but that we are forgiven by his grace, is what ministry is all about.
I don't like that answer. I think we ought to be able to get divorced whenever we want, for whatever reason we want. We don't want our pastors following us around and trying to lay a guilt trip on us when we want to get divorced. So, I'm pretty excited about the Gore separation and apparent pending divorce, because I think that I can play this out as what is described here by Michael Medved, the author of our article, as a quote-unquote good divorce.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about the Gores, Pastor? Is it possible that they could show the way, pave the way for the rest of us, so that we can follow in their footsteps and enjoy a good divorce?
Well, I would change the wording a little bit. Perhaps they can pave the way when a bad thing like divorce happens, that people can still remain civil with each other and can try to take into account the ramifications of their separation and divorce upon the immediate and larger world in which they live. So I'm all for having that chat. The embittered divorce, which ends up with lots of even worse things, or at least in my mind, even worse things happening, certainly is something that we don't want to have happen. But to call, to leap to the conclusion that divorce is good because we are trying to make the best of a bad situation, is not a necessary conclusion to reach.
Well, now we're splitting hairs a little bit, because I don't know that the cultural pundits, I think that was the term you used, are necessarily advancing the notion that divorce is good. That's different than saying, here's an example of a good divorce.
Mm-hmm.
And they probably would agree with you that, no, we can see that there's a lot of pain and suffering that goes on when a divorce happens. We're not here to say divorce is good, but we are here to say you can work your way through a path to a good divorce,
mm-hmm.
kind of like Al and Tipper are apparently about to have.
Mm-hmm.
And that lifts my spirit, Pastor, that I can have the hope that if I have to get a divorce, at least it can be a good one.
Mm-hmm.
And you say what?
Well, in a sense, it kind of lifts my spirit as well. I'd like to believe that people can get divorced and not kill each other afterwards. So, more power to Al and Tipper if that can be the case, and I'm sure will be. Yeah, yeah. Or trash each other, or badmouth each other in the eyes of the children, and all those kinds of things that go on with divorce. But I've got to return to the painting the picture of what a beautiful thing it would be if we could perfectly live in God's vision for his humanity, and return to that often, based on our understanding of Scripture, is a good thing to do. And we try to do that with the young people in our congregation. Certainly we've tried to do that with the young people in our house. my wife and I, and lead by example and by teaching to the fact that, gosh, God has a great future for all of us. It's an eternal future. It's not going to be perfect because of our fault, but what he really intends for his children are great things.
So, as God sits on his throne, running the universe, is it possible for God to peek over the heavenly cloud there, look down to the planet and say, "Oh, son of a gun, now that's a good divorce"? Is that a possibility?
Well, it's I like to think of God more than sitting on his throne peering over the universe as instead as present with us in word and sacrament and really involved in our lives, standing with us, being with us. And no, it's not possible from the standpoint of God intended divorce and he endorses it. I mean, the Bible's fairly clear on that. And so we have just can't say that from the standpoint of what we know about God in revealed scripture. We can say, as we've been mentioning here in a number of different approaches, that God stands with humanity and stands with all people, regardless of what their conduct and their situation is, and wants them to understand his grace.
Now, Michael Medved says in his article here, and we'll get President Tom Reese to respond to this, he says, concerning the widespread assumption that all marriages go stale or sour over time, the New York Times recently reported on a major study by neuroscientists at the University of California, Santa Barbara, who monitored brain function in long-term couples to check on the survivability of romantic love. To their surprise, a full 40% of these veteran partners showed intensely romantic neural reactions to one another, indistinguishable from the excitement and enthusiasm characteristic of newly formed relationships. Most of the other 60% with less spark and heat still expressed satisfaction and affection concerning their spouses, reflecting numerous surveys showing, are you ready? 75% of all American couples registering high contentment levels with their unions. Well, that's not what the mainstream media has been telling us. So he asks this question, the question that's on our mind, why then do 50% of all marriages end in divorce? He writes, the simple answer is, they don't. The 50% divorce rate is a pernicious myth that's never been true and grossly misstates the current situation. All figures show the divorce rate, measured as the number of divorces per population, peaked in 1981 and has gone down dramatically since that time. The actual rate of marital failure is notoriously hard to gauge since no one knows which of today's marriages will last and which of them will fail, but the Census Bureau still provides the most authoritative view of the recent past, listing in the latest available data from 2004 the number of American adults who have ever married, 72%, and the number of American adults who have ever divorced, 22%. This means that 70% of those who ever married remained married to their first spouse or stayed in that first marriage until the spouse died. Why am I getting this from Michael Medved? At least in my experience, Pastor Reese, every other voice that I've heard speaking in the media or in the culture has quoted this 50% divorce rate. It's like the sun coming up in the east in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Medved says it's not true.
Mm-hmm.
What were you thinking as I read that information?
Well, I was thinking I had seen similar observances of that and some things that I've read about the divorce rate, and don't know. I mean, I can't follow it up, but my instinct would be to agree with that the vast majority of people do remain married and stay in contented marriages. But the whole idea that it's the same marriage year after year, decade after decade, is obviously the case. Not the case. I mean, it's the first years of marriage present their own adjustments and adaptations and learning to be with each other. And then the next years come, and if the children enter the picture, there's all kinds of adjustments that take place there. The life cycles that go on in a human being, as well as in a human being in general, and as well as in marriage in particular, are fascinating. And they're fascinating to live through when you get the chance to do that. So it's I would tend to agree with him, but I don't have the statistics to back that up.
Well, we have what he has written here, and certainly anybody that wanted to follow up on this statistically could do that. I, like you, use the word instinct. I think instinct demonstrates that what he's saying here is probably true, which causes me to ask this question. And why is the media so wedded to the promulgation of the myth that 50% of marriages end in divorce? It would seem that if that statistic is not true, there must be an agenda involved here. What do you think that agenda might be?
I have no idea, but it would be an interesting to posit some possibilities about what that...
You got any possibilities?
Well, I'm thinking natural... Let's do theological.
Okay.
Natural
Please.
Man has a desire to go his own way. The natural man is bent away from God and toward himself. Wants to make his own decisions, wants to make his own rules, wants to make his own...
wants to be his own God.
Yeah, that's right. Wants to be his own God. And so, obviously, if I'm a theologian and I look at this, I'm going to say there's another example in a society that has less and less influence on the part of things religious and spiritual. I should say religious. There is a reflection of that. People making up their own decisions.
So let's say, in the couple of minutes that remain here, that it is true that there is a healthy number of people moving about the culture in this baby boom generation, this rather egocentric baby boom generation that we are in, who wants to be able to divorce willy-nilly and doesn't want to experience guilt for it, would like to just be able to divorce without having to go through that negative feeling when they're looking for somebody who will tell them, yeah, it's painful, yeah, it'll be hard, but it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And morally, ethically, it's not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So they begin to advance the notion that, well, you know, 50% of people, the marriages end in divorce anyway, so you're not alone.
Mm-hmm.
And now today, we find out, well, maybe that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
It's your chance as a pastor, as a theologian, to push back. This is your window of opportunity.
There you go.
To push back against that false notion that 50% of marriages end in divorce. So go ahead, Pastor, push back.
Mm-hmm. Well, the beauty of a long-standing marriage, a long-standing relationship, and what blessings that brings is where I would like to keep my focus and keep your focus as well, if I'm pushing back. And why not strive for that and believe that that is a great ideal, and then go for it. I mean, nothing. You have one life to live, and pursue that as the ideal. There are some good things that have happened. When I was in elementary school, I'm not quite sure how old you are, but I think we're pretty close to that age. I was in elementary school in the early 60s. Most of the children in the classroom had parents that were still married. So that those few that had parents that were divorced really suffered from stigma. And we certainly don't want that to happen. So there's always good things that come out of these kinds of conversations, social and or personal. But to reflect on it, just because the divorce rate has increased, and let's try and make it part of the general pattern of options, avoids the obvious scriptural beauty of one man, one woman coming together in God's eyes and staying together until death do them part. Pretty picture.
Amen. Thank you, Pastor.
You bet.
I call you Pastor this half hour. I call you President the first half hour.
There you go.
President Tom Reese, President of the LCMS Foundation, and a guest here on our Ask the Pastor Hour. God bless you, sir.
Thank you. Same to you.
We resume in 2 Corinthians on Monday. Hope you can join us then.
Listen to Chuck Rathard and guest pastors Monday through Friday at this same time on The Bible Study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for The Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the web at kfuo.org. Download programs from the Bible Study Archives at kfuo.org. The Bible Study is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis.